I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is cutting.
Hello and welcome to Fever FM. Tonight I am joined by Helena, Cam and Dale. Hello all.
Good evening.
Evening, Frosty.
Hello.
It was very cheerful.
Sounds so happy.
Was it cheerful or was it just you, mate? You sound like you need a hug.
It's not been the greatest day, let's put it that way.
Well, unfortunately, it wasn't the greatest day for the Phoenix Club overall, but let's start where it was a nice little light at the end of the tunnel. Versus Perth Glory, the midnight game, the women's side really at the must-win stage. I hate that cliche, but it was must-win against a struggling Perth side. We had a squad of Foster, Lake, Barry, Jabba.
Great question.
Yeah. Robertson, Brazendale, Breslin, Wynnum, Cox, and Speckmeyer. So effectively still no Longo or Annalie Longo or Kate Taylor. But otherwise, starting to look a bit healthier there. Unfortunately, that didn't last long with Lake ending up having to come off very early doors and having to be replaced by Emma Main. Not optimal, and certainly probably not the sub you want to make. How did this feel to you guys? Because I see a back going off and ostensibly a forward coming on.
Definitely a reshuffle, right?
Oh,
and another injury, I think, is probably what Temp's thinking, right? Like another injury.
Yeah, it hasn't been the greatest run.
Wasn't the prettiest of tackles either, was it?
It was pretty awkward.
I'll be honest, I watched it on my phone. It was tough to see.
I can't remember which Perth play it was. Just ran straight through the back of it. Didn't even get free kick or anything for it. It was just a big old play on, and it seemed like she caught her foot in the ground. Apparently it's an ankle injury, which she's apparently had already done previously in the season, so...
No, those are not good, which is a shame because she was just starting. I was about to say just starting to find her feet, but probably not the best choice of phrase, is it?
Insensitive ankle, best language.
She might find a bit of it back in Perth, I think.
Yeah, certainly looked a bit that way, didn't it? As you say, H. Temps has just got to be thinking he has kicked a leprechaun accidentally somewhere.
I mean, I thought considering it's like, as you say, it was a really not what you want to be happening kind of change, like just so unplanned for. I thought they did really well to ride it out. So I guess there's heart to be taken from that. But he's got to be like, I'm sick of this team having to be so resilient, you know?
Yep. Losing players from that defensive shape is really kind of the worst too. We do have a little bit of cover coming back for up front, hence Emma Main being able to be brought on, but. You know, when you're losing Lake, she probably would have started as your fourth choice centre back at the beginning of the season, and you're losing her, that is really problematic. It left Barry having to do a lot of heavy lifting in that centre of defence. She got caught out a couple of times, I noted, which is most unlike her. But the good news was that not long after that, we had a bit of a run through the middle. Speckmeyer breaking out in the middle. I thought she made a bit of a rough, poor decision breaking out wide, but delivers a delicate little back post cross where Cam and I were discussing Alyssa Wynnum's header the other night. This was the person that was trying very hard not to have to touch it, especially not with her head,
I described it as the least convincing header I've seen score a goal. I actually,
How did it,
on
how?
rewatching, I think it might have skimmed the head, but actually gone in off her foot. Looks like it's kind of like, I don't know, like again, watching on my phone, it's a small view, right? But it looks like it's kind of rolled down her body and off her foot and in. It was just all slow motion. I'm doing the hand actions with it because no one can see that, but just for emphasis, it was, I'm stoked she scored. Over the moon, she's got the goal. I really, really am happy for her. I know how hard she's been working, and it's good to see reward come for effort, you know? But yeah, it was a very, very odd way to score. It was, yeah. You'd expect a professional footballer to power that header home.
It was almost like it was too slow for her. It was just kind of
Yes.
like sitting there, and she was like waiting for it, and then like.
But it just like rolled down her face. Like, I don't
It was
even.
kind of like it was like a floaty speculator ball. You know what I mean? There was, if you're going to power it, you have to put the power in from your neck, and but that's what you would expect it to happen. But do you know what? It went in.
It
It
went in.
worked, so he shouldn't complain.
And her face, I love seeing Alyssa Wynn score.
Yeah, the surprise on her face was almost as much as in that first goal she scored. Like, hey, wow, I scored with my head.
Yeah,
Possibly because it again rolled down her face.
but that was
I
pure
too
joy
would be
again, right?
surprised if that went in.
Yeah, that's pure joy though. Again, like that's someone who's absolutely just loved what's happened and isn't afraid to show it, which is awesome to see. That's a great way to celebrate a goal. I love it. It's so good.
And it was in general a team that looked like they got their joy back collectively quite a bit, I thought. So it was kind of a nice piece of symbolism, probably, for the entire performance.
Well, it was a good combo too. I mean, really, for Spechmeyer, who was heading well into the wrong direction, there's no way she would have seen Wynnum going to that back post. But Wynnum's just drifted off the back post like she should, and no one's picked her up, which is not a good sign for Perth if you're just letting people drift in, not just into the 6 yard box, but basically just sit on the back post and just wait for someone to hit them and roll it down their face. The rest of the game was a bit to-y and fro-y, shall we say? Is that a nice way of putting it?
You think so? I thought
I thought we were quite good.
Yeah, but there wasn't. We were lacking something, I think, is what I'm trying to say. It's like we weren't putting lots of shots on goal. We were dominating that midfield position, but it didn't seem
It
to.
did kick off at midnight.
Yeah, valid.
There's got to be a little bit of allowance there made for the fact that they're playing between midnight and 2 in the morning. And I think if they don't look like they're dominating as you would expect them to against the opposition, there may be a fair shout there for they're probably usually asleep.
Sleepy time. Yeah, I've been on my rant about the midnight game before and what we should do back to them, but yeah, I didn't feel like they were sleepy, just maybe lacking a little confidence.
Well, I think that's probably to be expected, but I did think that you saw moments where they kind of looked like they're getting their confidence back. I mean, I do think Wynnum is again the best example of this. I think she had a bit of a swagger back in terms of like being willing to delay the pass, but those things don't come right overnight. Like, I'm sure there are still some things to iron out from what was a pretty extended form slump, very difficult time for the club. But I thought they looked pretty decent for most of the game.
Well, the second goal was a perfect case of that. I mean, playing that ball all the way through, and then the reverse pass by Wynnum was exquisite for Robertson to run onto. That just the link play was brilliant.
I actually just love a reverse pass. Like, I think a reverse pass might be my favorite thing on a football pitch because it's
and
kind of
it had to be.
audacious to try it, you know.
It had to be so beautifully timed too, because Wynnum was so central and having to dip off to the left a little bit to draw that defence across to open the gap on the inside for Robertson to run from the same, like from that left-hand side. It had to be pitch perfect, and it was. And beautiful to see Robertson scoring again too.
Yeah, tidy finish, because the keeper's come out, like it is still a bit to do, like it looks simple, but she's done it well, and that's just awesome.
I'd argue it's probably our goal of the season. For one, it wasn't a free kick. Two, just to start from our 18-yard box, play the ball into midfield, drive and run, and as you say, the reverse ball. And I guess probably just in terms of the context of the season as well, put us 2-1 up in a game we, probably had to win. Absolute banger of a goal.
Followed by another absolute banger, of course, by a notable free kick exponent, Dale.
Sure.
Well, yeah, maybe we should get to that in a bit. But Wynnum adding a lot more directness, I think. I've been critical of her in the past just because she hangs onto the ball a lot and isn't running past people. She doesn't have that speed, but she's shown that she's now a lot more physical, I think, able to hold onto that ball. She's not getting stopped. She's kind of leaning in, and just there was a couple of bits where she leant on a defender and just went, nah, not having it, which I was really impressed with. That shows a really good adaptation, I think. It's probably worth us having a wee chat about what the difference is between Alyssa Wynnum this year and last year, because, I mean, I read a stat, I think it was, she basically hadn't played up until the Ferns going away, and she's played the every minute since, like 270 minutes or something, which I think is testament to the place that the team was in, as far as getting people in, but the fact that she's getting every single minute now kind of indicates that she's become quite a pivotal member of the side. So what do you guys think that she's doing differently, better or otherwise?
I mean, I think Temps obviously has given her stuff to work on, and I did think, just looking at her from outside looking in, I imagine there's been a lot going on for Alyssa on and off the pitch. Like, all these things are kind of the swirl of factors, but she looks a lot more mobile. And like you say, that physical side of her game is coming, and that was always going to come with time. She's only 20. She's several years off kind of her physical peak, so I don't think that was like a lack of work ethic or anything. That's time. That's how you develop footballers. But I think that probably she's also benefiting from not having the entire team on her shoulder creatively. She doesn't have to do it all herself now. She's got players she can link up with. She's got other creators. I think that's probably been quite a positive change for her, even if it initially meant there was that grind to get into the team.
Yeah, I think we talked at the start of the season how this season there were more technically gifted players coming into the squad. And we all knew Macy Fraser. Obviously, she was looking good, but with players like Bredlin and Speckmire, that does take the pressure off. And I think Wynnum, last season, she is incredibly gifted. Like, there's stuff that she does on the ball that no one else in that team can do. It's just, it's really beautiful to watch. She's an incredibly gifted footballer. That doesn't mean it makes you a good team player, though. And I think what she's developed here is, obviously she's been creative, there's more head-up play. There's more looking for that link rather than being the player that has to do everything in around the box. She's actually going, now there's a run over here, I can pick that pass out now. So it's more heads up, more being aware of what's around and bringing those people in instead of having to take that responsibility on her shoulders. And it's going to make her a very good footballer moving forward.
Yeah, I think this game's, I think in particular, she was the assist and the goal, speak for itself. But I think that's probably her most complete 90-minute performance. I think she finished the game. I think in other games when she came in, she'd have a couple of good things, but, and maybe that's an element of Perth's decline, that they gave her space to roam and stuff like that and get on the ball lots. But I think in other games, she'd do like one or two good things, and then you wouldn't see her for long periods of the game. I think, I jokingly say she looks like she's running around in gumboots sometimes, because it's just a kind of ponderous kind of defensive and on tackling kind of quite often take, dwell on the ball a bit too much. And perhaps she's, been given a few more instructions about, what she needs to work on and play. And you know, she's being slowly brought into the squad more and built up her minutes, and is starting to maybe reap the rewards of trying to fit into the system and adapting to what was quite different to last year, which was a lot more, I guess, counter-attackive, so which probably suited her a bit more when the game was a bit spread, whereas here it's trying to create your own space and dominate possession a bit more. So and maybe it's just taken a while for that to sort of evolve over the course of the season.
Yeah, it's certainly gratifying to see the changes she's managed to wrought from a pretty, I mean, let's be honest, it seemed like it affected her confidence and her self-belief at least, and having to take that time off the pitch. So yeah, I think it speaks well for her mental toughness as well, that she's kind of come back from there and has earned the respect of the team again, and just like, oh, I can be here, I can contribute, I can be part of this team. So I think that's a really good turnaround.
I don't think she ever didn't have the respect of the team. I don't think that was the case. I think she's learned how to work within the system that Temps wants her to, and developed her game accordingly. I don't think there was a lack of respect from the other players around her.
Oh no, but I think when you're an existing member of the team, you've earned that respect. Like, as you're a contributor, you're a person that's involved. But when she was been out for that long, she's got to start again. Effectively, she doesn't have the mana that she carried from that first season. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it was a disrespect thing. It was just kind of like you have to do your yards, right? I wouldn't mind getting back to the, we've talked about the good things, but there was a couple of negatives for mine, and one of them I wanted to talk about was our ability to defend the set piece. It has become worrisome. Is this just a case of we have second, third, fourth string defenders in now, and it's just become a little disorganized? Is this a sign that people have been worked out? Is it a sign of anything? Is it just a random coincidence? Dale, yeah, I was going to go to you, mate. Don't worry.
I think one aspect is I think it was a very windy game, and that's always creates a bit of danger. I mean, Perth's delivery were quite handy as well, and particularly the one that led to the goal. You know, it's pretty tough to defend those ones that it's whipped so quickly that any kind of touch is going to probably likely go towards the goal. I think maybe in this one, yeah, they didn't really create anything, you know, of note. You know, they had a couple of corners and free kicks that kind of we didn't look, you know, entirely convincing, but we did, you know, scramble them clear. I wonder if Lake going off in this game was particularly noticeable, because she is the one who seems to win most of the defensive headers from open play generally. So perhaps she's the kind of the strongest back there, and her not being there and subbing on, you know, Main, who's not exactly the most tallest of players, and missed an absolute dolly of a chance from right in front, I think, didn't she, herself. But yeah, I mean, if you're an opposition team, you watched us in the last 2 weeks, you'd definitely be going, here's a number one route to goal. Anytime we get the ball in a corner or a wide free kick.
Anyone else got thoughts on this? Am I worrying too much about set piece? Okay. Well, why don't we move on to the final beautiful piece of this game. Macy Fraser, subbed on in the 65th minute, has decided to pull one of her little specials out and hit the bejesus out of it. Smashed it. It was still on the way up. That was what I loved. I love when someone hits it so well from that kind of distance and it's still on the way up. That's always a sign of a good goal. My son earned himself quite the telling off when he watched this and said some words that he wasn't supposed to. He was that impressed with this goal.
Did he say it around his mother?
No, he said it around me. You know, his mother wouldn't be around football ever.
You know the rules, man. The only place that language is allowed is around the football pitch.
Yeah, well, even if he's watching lounge, online. Mate. I'm his football coach this year, mate, so I can't let him do that.
I'm quite a fan of Macy going boom, man. That was not the first time this season, and I'm hoping it's not the last time this season, because she could have a nice little package of goals of the season. Just Macy Fraser goals of the season. There's quite a few candidates. That was some hit. That was beautiful.
It's just technically sublime, you know? You just look at it and you're like, yeah, that is how you strike a football so that a keeper cannot save it. Into the side netting, roll around the side netting, you know, just so nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's I know it's all about timing, but you expect someone who can hit it like that to be a bigger unit that's, you know, thighs like tree trunks, but Jesus, she times it well. That is a hell of a hit. I wonder how much attention she's going to get next year around the top of the box. You know, she's got. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of defensive units that they're going to be going, no, no, you hit it from there. Chance your luck.
Which she is hard to defend, though. You know, that's something I said at the very start of this about Macy. Like, you can, you know, the Macy shuffle. Like, I described that before she did it in games, because she does it and you know she's going to do it. And I played against her in futsal for years, but you just. It sounds ridiculous, but it's really hard to stop her doing it, even though you know it's exactly what she's going to do. She's just very evasive, that she doesn't actually need the element of surprise. Her execution is that good.
It's like when Paul Eiffel first came to the A-League, he had that turn that he did on the byline, and everybody knew he was going to do that turn, and he always did it, and he always beat the defender that was marking him. It's the same thing. Just because you know what's coming, if the execution is... Was it the excellence of execution? If it's there, you can't do anything about it.
Is that a Bret Hart reference?
It was a Bret Hart reference, buddy. I'm glad you picked it up.
Thanks.
Rocking it old school,
I don't
gents.
Even know who that is.
He's screwed. So. He's screwed, Cass.
Yeah, I can see Temps kind of writing this down for next season and going... We know that she's going to attract a lot more attention at the top of the box when she starts getting that shuffle going. Maybe there's a double team. How do we exploit that? It's a nice problem for a coach to have.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, but we are, 18 games into the season. If coaches haven't realised her ability by now, I mean, they probably shouldn't be coaching. You know, like it wouldn't take you more than a couple of games to realise it. I think it's interesting, though, like we talked probably... I don't know, maybe half a dozen games ago, about us being getting into these positions and only having, at some point, every time she got it, she was just trying to shoot from distance, or that was our only kind of creative chance. And yeah, she hasn't scored for a long time and probably had about 600 shots in the meantime. So it's nice to go Dobbins to remember that we could what she can do, because it has been a while, and that's not a criticism. These are tough chances, but I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a balance to be have here that, you know, I hope we just don't go back to going, oh, she's done the one now, let's just go back to her and take pot shots from 30 to yards out every time we get the ball in the attacking third.
Frosty, you say that she's going to receive some attention next season around the top of the box. Do you think she'll be here?
I genuinely think she will be. I don't think she has a lot of technical attributes. I'm not seeing that consistency like Dale says. You know, she kind of overplayed her hand a fair bit, especially at the beginning of the season. I wonder whether she's got the consistency now that other teams are going to come in for her and you know, put money down in front of her.
If she did move, I'd suspect it would be an A-League club coming in first, because the Americans, you know, she's an interesting prospect in women's football in terms of where she'd naturally go, because the Americans don't really care if being a technician's not their number one attribute that they look for. I can't really see the NWSL coming in strongly for her.
I see her in Europe. I think she's a much more... technically gifted player, as you say. Yeah, France, someone in there, or even the UK. There's certainly, if she's not here, I can see her ending up in Europe. And I think that's going to be the end goal. I hope we get it for more than one season, for sure. Mm. But I think the end game here is she ends up in Europe somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think she would, the dream would be Spain for her, like someone.
Yeah,
like
great shout. Actually, yeah, she would be fantastic in that kind of environment.
I mean, she's on a, I think she's on a 3-year contract, I think, isn't she? So,
I genuinely don't remember.
Yeah. It is a long contract. I think it's 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, so there's definitely an element of the fans will want to cash in rather than her just being able to leave. I probably wonder whether it depends on how she goes at the Olympics, assuming she goes. It's all well and good smashing some bombs in A-League, but if you're going to go to one of the top European clubs, you probably need to show something internationally. I would suggest for them to take a punt to buy a player from the bottom of the world.
Yeah, it's a good shout.
Even at like where she's at now, I think a Portugal, like a Sporting Lisbon, or like some of the smaller Spanish clubs would be looking now. Mm. To be honest, so.
Definitely interesting.
Going to be an interesting off season for her. There's big decisions coming up. If not this off season, the next one.
Mm. Well, definitely yeah, I mean, the I think next, you know. Dale's right. I mean, you'd be a mug to make any decisions for the Olympics. Just to, you know, you back yourself for that, right? Make a good showing and then watch the offers flood in and Domi wring his hands with joy.
I don't think a few hundred thousand dollars is probably, it might make a difference, but.
Yeah, it'll make him happy for a day, mate. A day or a week, you know. Old Domi Towers would, you know, there'd be a smile up there. So next game versus Sydney, unfortunately. Sydney obviously doing pretty well this season. There is a possibility that Flea will be back. I'm assuming you wrote this, Dale. How good's your source?
Temple said before this game that she was touch and go, and that she may have even had a fitness test morning off. So you expect perhaps that she is more go than touch.
There's a saying. So that game is on the Sunday, the 17th of March, at Jerry Collins Stadium at 4 p.m. So hopefully you can all get along and see a crushing of the mighty Light Blues. That would be a fantastic result. Hopefully Flea's getting back. It'd be nice to see her out there and marshalling the troops. Let us get on to the men's now. This was the game versus Melbourne City. Delayed coverage because it was so stupidly hot.
Delayed kickoff, not delayed coverage.
Kickoff, sorry, yeah. Well, the coverage was delayed too.
No, the coverage was live. The kickoff was delayed.
This is a fun semantics chat that the listeners will love.
Yeah. That's what they line up for.
You always tune into podcasts for pedantry of the people talking.
Yeah,
I know, I do.
You should have heard the feedback about less or fewer.
Oh Jesus! No, don't let the Lord Justice have to deal with that.
Unfortunately, just an oppressive climate for the men to take on. I think it was 37 degrees at 9 p.m. when they did kick off. Why is the A-League the only league in the world that thinks that football is a summer sport when it's 37 degrees at 9 o'clock at night?
I mean, understand in the Australian environment why they play then, though. Like, it's not a case of weather, it's a case of if we don't play them, we don't get column inches, we don't get people's bums on seats and eyes on screens. So, you know, that's the reason why they do it. But you're right, it's dangerous playing in that kind of heat.
Can you imagine what the pitch conditions would be like if they were playing after an NRL game in Australia? Like, they're bad enough as they is, and you know, got basically nothing on it.
That heavy roller would be going around a lot.
Yeah, to be fair, the pitch didn't look fantastic. Anyway, there's something about those Aussie sand pitches that just they don't scrub up well, certainly on TV. I don't know what they play like, but it doesn't look great, should we say that. At least I noticed the shot that was at least one of them bobbled before someone went to shoot. Who did we lose this game to? Was it Melbourne City or was it the Heat?
It is a good question.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Yeah, it's a philosophical question, but to me, Melbourne City didn't look like a team that were going to beat the Knicks if they were playing half decently. And unfortunately, we didn't. An interesting formation. Cam and I had a chat about it over the weekend, and I was quite surprised that Italiano had taken a fairly aggressive formation, being as it was an away game, and Cam quite rightly pointed out it was like he doesn't play it for the away games, he just plays it for the games he thinks so we can win. Playing four at the back rather than the five, occasionally having Salas drift back to cover that right pocket, I think was the way they were doing it. Where should we start?
Start at the beginning. It's a very good place to start.
If you can sing that, I'll let you have it.
Start at the very beginning.
It's a very good place to start.
Now this is what people tune in for.
This was Costa leading the line with, I've got to look this up, Ball, Kraev, Old up top, Paulson, Kelly Heald, Wooten, Sermon, Payne across the back, and in the middle was Rufa and Salas. So a fairly aggressive formation, but one that we still played that deep pocket. I found that very interesting. We've got more attacking players, but still played the deep pocket. Was this just to get them on the counter, or was this to save energy in the heat?
No, I think he's probably found something in the system that's that he played that he thought he could exploit. What that is,
or
I don't know. I'm not a tactical expert, and I haven't looked at the analysis that they do. And there's a lot of analysis of these teams now. But I think they've probably found something in there than the way they've set up for a reason. There's something they think they can exploit. He adapts his lineup and his team to an extent to the team that he's playing, right? We all agree that formation changes depending on who we're coming up against, and some of those players change depending on who we're coming up against to an extent. So it's got to be that the reason why he's playing the deep pocket and that those particular attackers and the formation that he's got them.
Yeah, there were a couple of opportunities early doors. I think Costa had one that just didn't connect with properly. Was it Arslan? I can never remember how to pronounce his name right without possibly offending him.
I want to call him Aslan after that lion from The Lion, Witch and the
Wardrobe. Lion.
Yeah. Aslan. Yeah.
If he had the big old mullet, then sure.
Yeah.
But I don't. Should do it anyway. And there was a couple of nice saves by Paulson there. It just didn't seem like anything was kind of fitting together for either team for certainly that first half. Actually, Paulson made a couple of good saves. But even the Salah shot that he decided to go inside out with his right boot didn't quite. It was not the connection you were kind of hoping for. Was it right boot? Yeah. Anyway, was it just one of these games that just wasn't coming together for either team?
I think it was coming together a bit more for them. I think they were probably definitely the better side in that first half. You know, could quite have easily been two goals down. That Paulson save from that close range header, which I haven't seen a good replay of whether it was actually Wooten's head or whoever the striker was.
It was Wooten.
It was, yeah. I thought it looked very foully, like, didn't it? It looked like he kind of got dragged down in that. Anyway. So, yeah, we didn't look the most cohesive defensively. Certainly not our historically high levels that we've had. We were given them some fairly decent chances. And then I think at halftime, they moved to back five, didn't they? Like, Salas went to sort of right wing back for a little bit, and then I think we conceded and we shifted back again. But, yeah, just very kind of a little bit disjointed that, yeah, we're probably lucky we're in that game for so long. And in some ways kind of frustrating that at the point at which Costa had his chance, we probably should have been well behind, but that could have should have been an equaliser, and we could have got out of there with a point, even if it might have been somewhat undeserved.
Mm. Yeah. I was keeping an eye on the midfield because I thought it was very bold by Chiefy to go just the two kind of because we'd played anything up to the three defensive midfielders in there with Alte, Pennington and Rufa. But then just to go Rufa and Salas, who hasn't had a lot of exposure to this setup. And he tends to be a little more, tends to play a bit more of an eight role rather than holding as much. So sometimes gets caught out a little bit, I think isn't a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I guess you could probably argue Old was kind of the third midfielder in there. Like, he usually starts a bit deeper as that kind of transitional just player. But I think with both him and Salas, I don't think that balance is quite right. It kind of leaves maybe Roof a little bit more isolated. And I guess the frustrating part of this is when we did have our glimpses, Melbourne City were just that cynical team of just dragging players back. You know, there's a couple of rugby tackles in there, cynical fouls. You know, lots of like yellow cards are breaking up play. Like, they knew, you know, as soon as we broke through, you know, their first line of defense and we had a couple of opportunities, it's easy to say we didn't create that much, but part of our thing is that transition. So a foul at halfway may not look like much, but could quite have easily led to a very good chance because that's how we play. So it's just one of those things that's incredibly frustrating and I think quite hard to kind of counter unless there's only so much you can really do if someone wants to drag you back. Like, you can try and move the ball forward, but then you're maybe not taking the best chance. You're taking the quickest chance because you feel like someone's going to scythe you down from behind.
I will admit to having flashbacks of the first time that we were, I think it was the Hutt Rec games that we played Hart, and they worked out just to kick us off the park. Just any time we started looking even like we were heading forwards just to rotate the fouls. And it was a bit of that. They just, yeah, you're right, Dale. They did look like they were just, okay, if you guys want to counter, you can do it from lying on the ground.
Yeah, it's what Sydney are also quite good at, which makes me a little bit nervous for this weekend's game as well. They know where to foul in the right moments and they can spread it around their team so it doesn't lead to anything, you know, significant. But I guess the other thing frustrating is just the goal we conceded.
Brain fart.
Just seemed like Paulson. Well, it just seemed like neither Paulson nor Kelly Hill knew there was a player there. Paulson obviously misread the cross, but you can misread the cross and then try to get back into position. But he kind of just misread it and stood there and thinking, oh, that was going out. And then, oh, the header's come across and he's just kind of watched it go past. I just don't think they realised he was there. Kelly Hill didn't seem to put a challenge on during or try any effort to kind of get back there. So I don't know exactly what happened there, but the header that was actually, everyone says, oh, great header. But if Paulson's where he should be standing, just straight into his gut.
Yep.
It's not a particularly, I wouldn't say it's a particularly high percentage goal that they scored from. I mean, certainly they missed worse ones than the one they actually scored, which makes it, this result even more frustrating.
Yeah, from the angle of that header, he had maybe three ball widths of a goal to aim at. And
yeah,
it was only because Paulson had come out to 4 yards off his line that gave him the window. I'm not sure whether Kelly Hill saw him and just went, I can't get to it, so I won't. But he kind of looked a bit like he ducked under it a bit. Maybe he thought that Paulson was going to get to it. I don't know. But as you say, very soft. It had gone well past the outside of that back post. So it should be bread and butter for a defence that's been mopping up those all day. To me, it looked like a very tired effort. It looked like they were just dripping sweat and just the legs were heavy. And I mean, Kelly Hill, you know, he's not got the highest jump, but he doesn't need one. You know, if he gets like an inch under his shoes, he's nailing that in the middle of his forehead. So
the reason why I say it, like, I don't even think they knew this there, because, you know, you might necessarily always be able to win a header, but you want to position yourself best for the second phase. And neither of them did that. Kind of just looked at it, stood there and looked at it. Which makes me wonder, like, did someone just say, oh, easy, or something, some kind of call that was taken to be misread and what it was meaning, and that they, you know, instead of thinking that the ball was just going to go out, they didn't realise someone was there. I don't know. But
I'll be honest, if you're the back post defender, you should have an idea. Because, I mean, their attacker drifted from the centre. So he's gone right around the outside of Kelleher. You've got to know that the guy's there. You can't just switch off there. So as much...
It didn't just appear from nowhere or...
Yeah, he didn't come in from the right wing and just absolutely blindside him, which...
No, there was no dynamic run or anything like that that you'd think, oh, they might have missed, but it was just very slow build-up and I just don't know how they missed it all.
I want to talk a bit about Paulson's involvement in this because I really struggle to understand this because when it was going over the across the goal, it was very high. He wasn't. I didn't think he had anywhere near a chance to bring this down. But he's come out for it anyway, and then it's drifted even long. Yeah. Can you explain it to me?
No, I can't.
Okay. Good. Let's move on.
Well, I think he's just misread the flight of it, I think. But and that can be recoverable just because of how far the ball has to travel. You know, it's going to the back post, not the back post. If you misread to the near post, it can be a bit more dangerous. So a lack of reaction to try get back to a better position, I can't understand what was happening at that stage.
Yeah. Okay, we should move on from this because I don't think we're ever going to make sense of it in the real world. We did see a couple of positives as the game wore on. We saw Pennington and Sutton get some more game time. So Pennington making a return, Altay coming on. Was it the debut of Sloane Rodriguez? It was, wasn't it? That very late substitution, but means we get to put the branding on him and sell him for lots of money when he goes somewhere else.
He is the youngest youngest ever player for the Phoenix.
Isn't he younger than the club?
No, same age.
No, not quite.
Yeah.
Well,
it depends. This is when he was born, eh?
I think he's June 2007. I think
June 2007. So the club was formed in March 2007, but didn't actually take shape until later because that was when we were awarded the license, right? So you could say that theoretically, you could say it was started in March 2007, I guess. So yeah, he would be younger than the club, but it didn't start this first game until later. Obviously,
don't ruin my fact though.
Yep. I'm going to call it same age as the club. Yeah, I for me it was just a game that we just heavy legs, tired. I want to make mention of the pass by BK for Costa's effort. Wow, I mean, was it 80th minute or something to run onto that and to put that ball through? You know, a very long, almost reverse pass for Costa to run onto. That was beautifully done. I mean, the man looks like he's permanently running with tight hamstrings, but the fact that he was still running in the 81st minute and put that pass through, kudos. That was beautifully done. I got my hopes up because I was sure watching Young play makes me feel slightly young, which is saying something. He looks old and he plays like he's old. I didn't think he was going to do much with that, and he kind of didn't.
Well, he didn't have to, did he?
Well, no. He just kind of stuck a paw out, and yeah, unfortunately, Costa didn't do much with it. But the way he came out, it just looked like Costa could have run around him twice. If he'd just taken a touch around him, he was gone. Yeah, I got my hopes up, Dale. I got my hopes up.
I mean, you'd bank him to score that most times. I think if you look slow back, the ball's doing a slight bobble, I think, as it's going.
It did.
And he just tries to dink it sort of past, and obviously it's almost like a half air swing, and so he ends up sort of shanking or slicing it a little bit. Yeah, well, could have been whether that point is important come the end of the season. I guess we'll find out. But there's plenty enough games to make up from here anyway. Like, it's, everything's stalling now. As much as some people have started, you know, writing our obituary already, both here and across the Tasman, we're still well within the title race. Like, you know, we still have to play Central Coast. So there's no reason why we can't.
Four more wins as long as one of them's against Mariners.
I'm excited to see the bounce back performance personally.
Well, let's cover that table. So we are now officially second on the table based on wins and a slight goal difference as well, obviously, but on the same points as Central Coast. There is still a gap open to third place, which is a nice buffer to have. Yeah, top two is kind of what we need here. Obviously, top one, so Cam doesn't have to fly to Australia for the final.
Well, if we get an away leg over there, even, you know, in a home grand final, I'll go over for the away leg of the playoff. But yeah, it'd be ideal not to have to do that twice.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I'll just point out Sydney are floating there. I know they're a little bit further back, but they have a game in hand and have to. Do get to play us in Central Coast. So if they both win that, that kind of closes that gap up as well.
Yeah.
It does, but they could also do us a favour.
Sure. I think 40 points generally gets you around the top four for a season in the year, this number of games in the A-League. And around 50 points should get you pretty close to the title. So as long as we beat the Mariners when we play them, another four wins should see us there. I don't see us missing out on the playoffs, which is great, and I think we're already in there. But and we're pretty much almost guaranteed a home one because of who has to play each other and so on and so forth. But I think genuinely for us to have a shot at winning the lot, we need to finish ideally first, but at worst second. I think if we have to play too many times in Aussie on the playoffs, that's going to cost us just because I'm a little slightly pessimistic when it comes to us in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's fair. So just a reminder, Central Coast and the Knicks both on 40 points, having played 21. Melbourne Victory on 34, so 6 points back, having played 21. MacArthur, 2 points behind them, having played 21. And then Sydney on 31 points, but with a game in hand. Sydney are kind of coming home with a bit of a wet sail at the moment. They seem to have figured out how to play again. Adapted to that. Who's the RB Leipzig assistant coach playing the high press?
Zulich.
Thank you. So that'll be an interesting little game that we've got to have against them. The good news is that there's potential that Oscar Zavada and Van Hattem will be available for selection. The other good news is that some of the good performances we've seen from the Knicks have got them call-ups for the All Whites tournament. That would be Alex Paulson, Finn Sermon, Tim Payne, Ben Old, Lucas Kelly-Heald, his first-time call-up, Costa being recalled, but no call-up for Alex Rufer. I found this a little bit interesting.
I think it's a bit harsh. Joe Bell is the only recognised six in the squad that's going. There's a lot of eights and a lot of tens around that, and there's a lot of people that can play attacking football, but Joe Bell is the only recognised six. We do have room in there for a roofer.
I agree.
Yeah, I was very surprised that I think there were six or seven midfielders, and all of them were either eights or tens apart from Bell. Seems weird to me. And I think Alex has been hard done by. That's the end of my rant about Darren Bazley's selections.
Fair enough, mate.
I'll do the rest off here because this is a Phoenix City. This is a Phoenix chat, so we're not going to.
Sure.
I should probably look up the game, which is coming up at on the 16th of March at 5:30. At Eden Park. So if you happen to be in the Auckland area, Helena, or fancy a good little trip up there before we have to call it an away game next season, please head on up, make some noise. Feel free to call Ufuk Tale a Phoenix reject.
I know it's not true, but it'll be funny.
Big game, I think, Kay. Big game.
It's the classic six-pointer, I think.
Yeah, I think back-to-back losses and then going into a break, I don't know. I think you always go into an initial break with a win, don't you? And yeah, Sydney are on such a good run of form. I mean, in that, you know, one of the few teams who have beaten us this season, although perhaps that 3-1 wasn't quite as...
It didn't tell all the story, eh?
Yeah, and it's quite interesting, like, contrast in styles. You know, they'll try press us and we'll try play through it. And we tried to play that, basically, you know, we tried to think first time round, we overplayed that at times and got caught out. And I think since then we've maybe shifted their balance to be prepared to play some longer balls when the time is right. So we'll see how that plays out.
It'll be interesting to see how Chiefy adapts himself at the end of this game as well, knowing that Ufuk figured him out last time. So it'll be interesting to see what tactically he does differently against Sydney this time round. And obviously they know each other well, and Ufuk brought him on for a reason, understands and has seen how he did tactically at the NPL level as well. So, you know, I think it's a bit of a challenge there for Chiefy, and it's going to be a big 3 points that we need to grab.
Yep. For mine, it comes down to three teams at the moment. Us Mariners, who are just quietly trucking away in the background, and Sydney coming home very quickly. If we can just put a dent in them, take points, I think that'll maybe start to loosen their grip on the tiller as they come home. Right, so that game, 5:30 at Eden Park on Saturday. Unless anyone has any further words of wisdom?
Only one other thing that I've noticed is that the Phoenix can now enter in the Chatham Cup and the Kate Shepherd Cup. Which has been a rule change.
Really?
Yeah, rule change for the upcoming season. As long as all the players that are participating are amateurs, they can play in the Chatham Cup.
Okay.
So none of the first team at all, and there'll be a fair few, I'd say, of the Rezzies who scholarship players like Matt Sheridan, for example, who probably aren't going to be eligible to do that. But it is good. I'm glad that they've changed that and that they can compete in that competition. I think the Phoenix Women's Rezzies will carve up at that level.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. It will be interesting because they didn't carve up against Auckland National Team Clubs.
Yeah, because they are a lot younger, right? They're 15, 16-year-olds.
Don't reckon in Mickey Robertson, if they drop back down to the academy, they'll be non-pros. They'll be off contract at the time. I know Zoe went back to the academy. She was young, fair. I went back to the academy in the last off-season and was playing and training in there. So if that's a possibility again, then they could actually get some decent players, some very good players dropping down. And the players that are in there are good footballers. There's some very, very good young players on that team.
I don't doubt that, but like very similar squads struggled against Auckland National League squads a couple of months ago. So it won't be as, I don't think they'll cakewalk it. Like the Auckland teams are very strong.
It's going to be a good watch. I'm looking forward to it.
As long as they beat Eastern Suburbs, that will bring me joy.
And Forest Hill, wasn't it?
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love the parochial nonsense. That's what we love to see. on that note, we'll call it quits there as we all want to go to bed. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon, hopefully, about big 6 points in the bag for the club. Thanks for listening. Bye.